Good morning. You're listening to 91.5 KUNV, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, Tobin LePan, and Las Vegas Sun reporter, and our co-host, Patrick Kulikin, is up in Carson City today, where he's reporting on all the legislation that came through on Monday. Patrick, what was the hottest topic in Carson City yesterday in terms of legislation?
Hard to say, because it was a deadline for legislators to drop legislation, and so there was a lot that came down the pike. Senator Tick Sagerblom introduced a Senate joint resolution that would begin the process for legalizing gay marriage. It's kind of a two-step process because they need to repeal the constitutional amendment that says only a marriage between a male and a female person shall be recognized. They would have to get a majority vote this year in the legislature, and then again in the 2015 session, and then it would go to the ballot in 2016 for the voters. If the majority of voters go for the repeal, then the legislature could legalize in the 2017 session. Our colleague Andrew Doman wrote that up this morning. And so a long process, and obviously with ongoing litigation, it's not clear that it'll take us that long, but this does begin the process, and I suspect that at least step one here should have a decent shot at success.
All right. And it's something that the Supreme Court of the United States is also taking up, gay marriage cases, and so the landscape could change, I guess, while we're debating this here in Nevada.
Right. Because the issue is before the court, the U.S. Supreme Court, which is deciding on California's Prop 8, which passed in 2008, banning same-sex marriage. At this point, as Andrew reports, only Democrats have signed on. They, of course, are in the majority. And I suspect when all is said and done, that we'll have some Republicans that will also sign on. And I think certainly the polls, there was a recent poll, national poll, that came out yesterday showing the really sharp reversal over the last 10 years on this issue. And I'm sure that's also the case in Nevada. And I expect that should begin the process of legalizing gay marriage in Nevada.
All right. And also another topic that definitely gets a lot of attention is marijuana. And in, I believe, Washington, Colorado, in the last election, the voters approved legalizing marijuana for personal use. And now we have our own bill that has been brought up for legalizing marijuana. Is that right?
Right. Assemblyman Joe Hogan, a Las Vegas Democrat, introduced a bill to legalize and tax. That's Assembly Bill 402, if you're watching closely. And our colleague, Internet Damon, wrote about this yesterday. This would allow Nevadans older than 21, they could legally possess up to an ounce and up to six marijuana plants. Obviously, we already have a medical marijuana law, although there's no legal system for obtaining the drug. The legislature is also taking up that issue. That's separate. But Hogan is looking for full-on legalization and would tax at the 25% excise tax at each step of bringing the drug to the market, wholesaler to processing, from processing or wholesaler to the retailer, and from retailer to customer. And all the revenue would go to public schools.
So, which is similar to, I think, what Colorado, in terms of the Colorado, successful Colorado campaign to legalize personal use.
I think it's modeled that way.
And what? Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was wondering what chance you think this actually has of passing, considering, I know California, which is frequently considered more liberal than Nevada in general, the voters have not approved a couple chances to go for personal marijuana use over, you know, in addition to medicinal use. What do you think? Is this going to pass here?
Well, I haven't done a whip count on the legislators, but I feel like my sense has always been that the public is far out in front of politicians on this issue. And I think we've seen that in because where we've had legalization in Washington and Colorado, they had to do it through the initiative process. I think elected officials still, I think they're wrong. I think that there's more public support for this. And in fact, it was a Gallup poll last year that showed a majority for the first time favor some form of legalization nationwide. But I think politicians still afraid of a mail piece that would Photoshop, you know, their face next to some sort of big fat joint. and the coinciding political attacks that would go along with it. Yeah. And so getting a majority of elected officials, I think, will be tough, and then a governor's signature, very tough. Brian Sandoval, I think, is still sometimes mentioned as a national political figure. I don't think that's likely, but it's certainly an outside chance of that. And to have signed on to a marijuana legalization bill seems pretty unlikely, especially since he spent time on the federal bench. He's very process-oriented. He's very legally careful. And obviously, if you're legalizing marijuana, you're setting up conflict with the federal government, where it's still illegal, and the DEA is enforcing that law. So I don't see this happening, but it's interesting that it's been introduced and gets the conversation going, and I personally think it's a healthy development. Mm-hmm.
And now we're also, the legislature, as you said, is taking up a different marijuana issue, which is that we have in Nevada a medical marijuana law, but there is technically no legal way to actually obtain and possess that marijuana if you have a prescription. And so that's coming up in the legislature as well, right?
Right. I think that has a better shot. The initiative, when it passed originally, it said the legislature shall create some mechanism for acquiring it, and the legislature promptly just ignored that edict. You actually can't bind future legislatures. So you can't really tell a legislature what to do. So they created this problem where people have their medical marijuana card. They don't really have a way of getting it, and a judge pointed this out, and it's created a bit of a problem in the Nevada legal system, which Senator Tix Eggerblum is trying to clear up with some legislation. I'm not sure how that will go. Again, you run into the problem of the governor, who may be reluctant, given what the federal government still says. The feds say we're not really interested in prosecuting people who have a half ounce of marijuana for their glaucoma or whatever, but they're not into large grow operations, as they've shown in crackdowns in various states across the West where medical marijuana is legal. So this will be interesting to see how this plays out.
Right. And now, yesterday, in the flurry of legislation that was submitted under the deadline, I picked up on the driver's privilege card, which the Democrats and Senate Majority Leader Mo Dennis said they were going to introduce. And that is basically after 9/11, the U.S. passed federal laws for if you're going to use a license for a federal ID, you have to have certain provisions, and some of those are that you have to prove that you're legally in the United States, living in the United States. And so that caused a problem. Obviously, we have plenty of unauthorized immigrants in the country and in Nevada, and sometimes they drive anyways, and sometimes without insurance. And so this driver's privilege card would be available to anybody with that can just basically prove their identity with a foreign passport and can prove residency in Nevada with, say, a utility bill, and then they would be eligible to be insured, and they would have to take a driver's test, which I would say is a good public safety move. And now this does seem to have bipartisan support, unlike some of the more split down the middle issues we've talked about. Do you think this is going to have a pretty easy ride through the legislature and become law?
Well, nothing is easy here. Anything can happen. But there does certainly seem to be some movement on the Republican side, especially Western Republicans who reckon with large Latino populations in their states that they going the anti-immigrant route is very dangerous for their electoral futures. And so they seem much more open to more liberal immigration policies. Plus, I think that they probably, they look at Utah, where this is done, right? Mm-hmm. And they say, well, Utah seems like a pretty conservative place. And they put this policy into effect because they think it's good policy. So maybe we ought to consider doing the same.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a shot there, and I think the governor is probably is open to the idea as well, and obviously that's important for eventual passage. And but it's amazing how much movement we've seen on this issue. I think this never would have even been proposed 2 years ago.
Right. And I think, it probably also says something a little bit about the change in the composition of the legislature, right, in terms of Mo Dennis and Ruben Kiwin being the majority leaders in the Senate, and an influx of Hispanic legislators. And this is obviously an issue that's a little bit more important to the Hispanic community.
Right. I mean, now you have, is it 10?
I think so. I think it's the caucus has 10 in it. Yeah, but one of those was technically Stephen Brooks, so that might change things.
Right. Now he's as of now indisposed.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it for right now. Right, but yeah, well, it should be mentioned that Senator Mo Dennis, who led the charge on this bill, he did model it after Utah, but Utah eventually added provisions for fingerprinting and criminal background checks, which they some critics said would sort of undermine the intent of the law, which was to get more people to take the driver's test and have insurance while driving on Utah's roads. And so that portion has been left out of the Nevada law, and there's even provisions to not share the information collected for the driver's privilege cards with immigration enforcement.
So the fear is that some folks in Utah decided not to take the test and get the card because they don't want fingerprinting in contact with the authorities.
Right. And I mean, that's the fear for advocates saying, which you don't do, obviously, for people who are just applying for a driver's license. And they thought that would lead to, fears. And indeed, it's not totally clear why, but the number of Utah driver's privilege cards has actually dropped since 2008 by like 5,000 or 6,000. And, it could be just be movement, with a down economy, a lot of unauthorized immigrants, either return to their home countries or moved from state to state looking for work. And so it's unclear why, but it also could have been tied to some of these changes. But anyways, moving on and more ID-related things, there was a Voter ID Act that was introduced as well, right?
Right. That I'm pretty sure will go nowhere. That's Lynn Stewart has introduced Assembly Bill 319, which would require government ID to vote. Now, as you might know, the Secretary of State, who's a Democrat, Ross Miller mm-hmm. has introduced his own proposal, but it's a little bit, quite a bit different. It would not require an ID. It would, you would show up if you didn't have an ID, they would take your photo, and then that way they would have it for the voter file. This bill, which I confess I haven't read, looks like it's more of a straight voter ID bill. Stewart says, and nearly everyone has an ID, so it was not imposed an undue burden on voters. Of course, he's wrong about that. A significant percentage, especially of elderly minorities, who happen to be the most faithful voters, African-American women, I think in the last two presidential elections, were the most likely to vote. And amongst the elderly of that population, many of them actually don't have IDs. And many of them don't have very good access to IDs because they were born in the Jim Crow era, and it's not very easy for them to get a birth certificate and so forth. So this is the kind of legislation that is Democrats especially are very resentful of, and this will not go anywhere. It's frankly not... not very smart on the part of Stewart and the Republicans to offer this. It just engenders a lot of bitterness. And of course, it addresses a problem that doesn't exist because there are not hordes of voters with of fake people going and swaying elections. Doesn't happen. And one would think that the last election cycle would have shown that, but some people can never quite see the light.
Right. Yeah, we certainly had very few reports of voter fraud here in Nevada in this last election. And the one case that I can think of that was prominent was because the woman who tried to vote in two different locations.
She wanted to show how flimsy our system was.
And she got caught.
Yeah,
right.
The whole thing is that voter fraud, widespread voter fraud, requires a lot of people to agree to go commit a crime. It's like getting a bunch of people to agree to commit a crime at the police station. It's just foolish and just can't be done. So, but anyway, I don't see that legislation going anywhere.
Right. What about Ross Miller, our Secretary of State's proposal? Do you think that has more legs or better legs, maybe?
I haven't asked around about that, but I know that when he originally introduced it, I think he kind of made the mistake of he didn't alert his fellow Democrats. And just the words voter ID are really so toxic for Democrats that it might be a problem. I'm not exactly sure what the path of that legislation is in the session so far.
Gotcha. All right. You're listening to 91.5 KUNV. I'm your host, Tobin LePan, and our co-host, Patrick Kuhlhicken, is in Carson City today, and we're talking the latest Nevada legislative session and what bills were introduced sort of under the wire yesterday at the deadline. And moving on, we have a bill referring to the constable's office. That's been a big issue here in Las Vegas, and I know that the County Commission has been looking into dissolving the constable's office, and now this has also come up in Carson City.
Right. Constable Bonaventura has been accused of sexual harassment, or is out of his office anyway. He got pulled over when he was driving. He was not driving drunk. He was just driving a little buzzed, but he was under the legal limit, and he had all kinds of problems out of that office, of course, and the county commission's had enough of it, and so they have wanted to eliminate. They're really at war with Constable. And Senate Minority Leader Michael Roberson just jumped into the fray. He is quite adept at finding issues that will draw press attention. And he proposed a bill to make the Clark County Sheriff the constable. I guess I should clear up what the constable does. A constable evicts people and delivers official documents and so forth. It's one of these relics of our frontier system. And
then, of course, the constable argues that if you put those burdens on, say, Metro Police, that they would have less time for other crimes and that they then would not be able to do their jobs as well.
Right. Although, presumably, if we were to eliminate the constable's office, we would have some money, which we could, the sheriff could then use to hire people to do the constable's job. It's a kind of a fun story. It'll be interesting to see if it comes to a merciful close here in Carson City.
Right. Well, it's definitely it's always interesting, especially with Constable Bonaventura. He is not afraid of stating his opinion in public. And moving on, we also had some Medicaid legislation come up as well, right, involving copays.
Right. So Governor Sandoval has put in his budget to go along with Obamacare and expand Medicaid. And the proposal here from Republican Senator Kefauver of Reno is that there would be small copays associated with for Medicaid beneficiaries. So that's when you have to pay a little bit of money when you go to the doctor. I believe this would apply only to those who are eligible, newly eligible, under Obamacare. So these are the less poor, I guess I'd put it.
Okay.
They'd pay a $5 charge for emergency room visits in non-emergency situations, which is kind of odd, I guess, because I thought if you had Medicaid, you'd be going to the doctor, not to the emergency room. That's the whole point. But there is a little bit of clamoring on the Republican side that if we're going to have expand Medicaid and deliver health care to poor and working class people or the working poor, then we also need to make sure they pay for their soup, if you will. So that one, I'm not sure where that one's going to go, because I don't know the Democrats will go for that, but we'll see.
Right. All right, and then today, we've mentioned, Senate Minority Leader Mike Roberson, and you've written a column about him today in Today's Sun, I believe, and speaking just about him and his enigma, his stay as an enigma, and so talk a little bit about Roberson and what you found in talking to people.
Yeah, pretty interesting situation here. He's the Senate Minority Leader. Last session, he was elected, and he had been elected in 2010. As a first-time legislator, he's a local transaction business attorney, elected in the Republican wave of 2010, and came up here and was essentially just a conservative bomb thrower. He liked to attack the public employee unions, teachers union, the Senate Majority Leader Stephen Horsford was a frequent target. I don't think there was much in the way of legislation that was attached to his name when all was said and done. He was obviously not a fan of the majority. And through a series of events, he wound up as the minority leader and in part because he was an effective fundraiser. And the Republicans did not take the majority, but they came close, and so he's got quite a bit of leverage because any revenue increase will require 14 votes in the Senate, and the Democrats only have 11. And he's kind of stirred the pot already this session with some surprising moves. He called for a tax increase on the mining industry and got out in front of the Democrats on that issue. You don't hear Republicans usually first in line to offer up a tax increase.
Right.
But he's taken on the mining industry, which has a lot of sway in this building because they spend a lot of money on lobbying and they spend a lot of money on campaigns. Two big mining companies and the Nevada Mining Association spent nearly $1 million on the 2012 election. And he and six of his Senate Republican colleagues have broken, and I think surprised a lot of people in the building by suggesting that we should eliminate mining's constitutional tax status. This was a resolution that was passed last session, needs to pass again, that'll go before the voters. And then he's also suggested that instead of the business margins tax that the voters will see in 2014, that this should be offered up as an alternative. So that was pretty surprising. And then he also has legislation that would take the Southern Nevada Water Authority, the powerful water board down where we live, and instead of being governed by a board of elected officials, which is a board that is usually seen as something of a almost a Politburo of the water boss, Pat Mulroy, instead place it under the jurisdiction of the Public Utility Commission, which is based here in the Capitol, and may have take a more independent regulatory role in overseeing the Southern Nevada Water Authority. And so there he was taking on Pat Mulroy, our powerful water chief, and she has a lot of allies in the Las Vegas Strip. So taking on some powerful interests, and I think we're all kind of watching and wondering what his end game is and what he wants to accomplish. And having talked to a number of lobbyists in the building yesterday, people who've been here a long time and watched this process, they're as baffled as I am, but it certainly makes it more interesting.
Yeah, well, it's definitely something to watch or someone to watch moving forward with a lot of interesting legislation coming up this year. And so that's about all the time we have today. You've been listening to Neon Eden on 91.5 KUNV. I'm your host, Tobin LePan, and our co-host, Patrick Quillican, called in from Carson City today to fill us in on all the happenings in our legislature. Thanks, Patrick.
Good to be here.
All right, and see you next week.